Andy Borowitz of the Borowitz Report is joining us from New York City. And did you know Andy Borowitz, too? He actually wrote and conceived The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I think so. I think it's true. I saw Borowitz's name. Well, let's find out if that's true or not. Andy, that's true, right?
That is all true, Michael.
Yeah, you must have been like, what, 12 years old when you wrote that? That was a long time
ago. Well, I was just this kid out of West Philadelphia, and, you know, it was sort of an autobiographical story.
Yeah. How did you do it? I mean, how old were you? You're probably in your 20s, right?
I was around, I guess, 30, and... Oh.
You're really old now, aren't you?
I'm really old now.
Oh, jeez.
But so is Will Smith, so there.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I was under contract to NBC, and Quincy Jones had brought Will Smith into the network. That was probably the most name-droppy sentence I've ever said in my life.
It was a good one.
Really packed a lot in.
It was good.
In there.
I liked it.
Will Smith at that point was a 20-year-old rapper and considered definitely a has-been at the age of 20. He'd had a couple of hits when he was 16, and now he was completely over. And like most people who are on their way down in show business, he was reaching out for that life raft of a sitcom. You know, that's what you do when you're all used up. And in his case, it just turned out to be, you know, the beginning of this storied Hollywood career. And
you made Will Smith.
I did, and I think someday he will thank me for that.
Yeah. I really do. Nothing so far. I'm surprised.
No. He's actually a really good guy. He really is a good guy. I know people say that in show business, and they don't mean it, but this is the only time anyone has ever meant that.
Yeah. How did you get all the? I mean, it wasn't exactly urban in today's sense of the word. It wasn't hip-hop sort of thing, but you seem to really get the language down. And everything, and the attitude.
It was hip-hop. You know, yeah. I grew up on the mean streets of Shaker Heights, Ohio.
Okay.
So I knew what life was like. You know, it was what was great was I just really spent time with Will and believe it or not, a whole bunch of other rappers. Because he had all the early 90s rappers did the show at one point or another, like Queen Latifah and...
Right.
MC Hammer, remember him?
Yeah.
He was there.
That's
right.
Don't touch this. That's
yes.
it, yeah.
Yes, Hammer Time was definitely 1990 to 91, and that's when he was hanging out. But, you know, you would just, it's like any writing challenge. You know, you'd sit around and listen to the slang and pick it up, and it was really sort of a fun experience.
It was good writing, and good writing for him. He's such a natural.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you really knew that the moment you put him in front of an audience. It was not any great mystery. Like, none of us were sort of patting ourselves on the back and said, wow, we've really found, he was made to be an entertainer, he really was.
Yeah. His son, not so much, I would say. I don't want to.
That was just mean, Michael. We weren't even bringing that up.
I'm sorry. But he was total natural.
We were saying so many nice things about
the Smith family. I'm really sorry about it. But the kid takes after the mother, obviously. So anyway. Oh, I don't know that. I'm sure she's lovely and he's good. It was just a bad movie that they put.
You know, I think the audience is turning on you. Maybe we should go back to talking about Malaysia Airlines again.
Because that's always good.
Yeah.
Now you get into certain trouble, don't you? Because of the Borowitz Report, you touch on all kinds of items that people probably think you shouldn't touch on.
Yeah, including Malaysia Airlines. You know, people. You know, they're. But you know, the problem is that there really is something, even in the darkest things, there's something funny about everything. And actually, I would argue it's probably even in a little way. I never would accuse myself of being helpful. But it is kind of helpful to laugh at tragedy. Not you know, you don't want to make fun of victims, but you do. I mean, I think the coverage of the Malaysia Airlines thing has been laughable.
Yeah. Oh, the over coverage of it?
Well, the over coverage in the absence of any facts, I would say.
Yeah.
Just from watching cable news. I mean, I was watching CNN yesterday, and they actually had a headline. You know, CNN always has breaking news, and it says breaking news, and that gets your attention at the gym when I'm watching it. And it said, breaking news, Malaysia Airlines mystery deepens. And I just thought, that's actually, that thing, we actually know less than we did before. So yeah. That's technically not breaking news.
It's a tribute to the media. Do you sometimes feel that the media is not what it once was? First of all, it didn't used to be the media. It used to be the news.
Right, right.
And then it's a little different when it's the media, right?
Well, you know, it isn't what it once was. And I think one of the problems, I have a problem with the media in that they're now trying to be hilarious all the time. Like when you watch, I don't know if you feel this, but when you're watching CNN, I feel like sometimes they're trying to be like The Daily Show. And they'll show a lot of clips from late night comics and they'll be laughing, you know, amongst themselves and trying to be funny. The only problem is that they're not funny at all. So it's really a bad task that they've set for themselves.
Yeah.
And I actually like watching things like the BBC, where they just are totally deadpan.
They do news.
It's almost as if they were doing the news.
Yeah. I'm sorry to step on that.
you didn't step on it, but we're just in agreement there. But I think one of the problems I've had doing the Borowitz Report in the last, last couple of years mainly, is that I'm sitting here trying to write fake news, and what I find is that it's often picked up and reported elsewhere as real news.
Yeah.
And this is happening a lot in
You're
China.
You're lucky. I never get covered.
Well,
I've never seen one of my jokes.
It's an honor. It happens to me a lot in China. There's this news service called the Xinhua. Xinhua, I think is how it's pronounced. And it's like the biggest news agency in China.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of the stories I've done in the last year have been reported in China by Xinhua as absolutely true.
Yeah.
And that, I think, creates even more confusion.
And I know that happens to The Onion and The Daily Show and so forth.
It does. It does.
I mean, for some people, you're probably their favorite news source. And that says something about the age in which we live, I guess. You know.
Well, I mean, it's certainly true, I think, in Shanghai. People go to the Borowitz Report first, through Xinhua. But, I was just thinking about this, that some of the stories that they've reported in China as being true, really on the face of it, you really think they could have figured out that maybe they were fake news. I'll give you an example. I did a story last year. I don't even know if you remember when Kim Jong-un of North Korea was threatening a lot of missile tests and things like that.
Yeah.
And I did a story about the headline indicated that North Korea's missile test had been delayed by problems with Windows 8. And this was picked up in Xinhua. And, you know, the irony is you'd think that China, you know, geographically is a little closer to North Korea, so maybe they would actually find out for themselves what was going on rather than going to the Borowitz Report for the truth. But
I did a lot of stuff about him, about Kim launching a PlayStation 3 in orbit. You know, none of that got picked up, and for good reason, I guess, as I think about it. Well, what is this now that I did read this thing? I think it was in the Observer that you have given up Twitter? Are you Twittered out? And your wife is quoting as saying that it was ruining your relationship or something. Your incessant tweeting.
Well, you know, I was tweeting for about 3 years, and everybody in the media, especially places like New York, it's really considered required that you be constantly tweeting. And after about 3 years, I figured out a couple of things. One thing I figured out was that I was never getting paid for this.
Yeah.
I just sort of realized this is entirely a voluntary activity.
Yeah.
But I think that my moment of clarity happened when I was, I think I told this to the Observer, I was shopping for clothes at a store, and somebody on Twitter reached out to me and messaged me and said, Casey Anthony was just acquitted. Where are you? And I realized, I'm now on call to say something funny about everything. It's like being a surgeon or something, except that I'm supposed to be making a 140-character wisecrack 24 hours a day. So I thought that it was occupying just too much of my life.
Yes.
So now I just watch porn instead. It's a more healthy, and my wife applauds that.
She's in favor of that one, huh?
Yeah.
Does she? She doesn't tweet, I suppose.
No, she
or
tweeted
Twitter.
A little.
What is actually the verb for a person who does it?
It is to tweet.
To tweet.
It is to tweet.
And a person who does it, it's called a twerp, then? Or a...
I think it's just called a damaged person. I think it's the term. It's actually
I do it, but I don't know what it's called.
It's people who need a lot of attention. And that's why you'll see a lot of us comedians are on Twitter, because we, you know, it does reflect some damage. And I hope I'm not overstepping, Michael, but for you and I like to go in front of audiences and tell jokes and get laughs. And that's really not something that a normal person really needs to do. Like,
no.
Most people are fine, are content to go through their lives without getting laughter from total strangers.
That's true, isn't it? I hadn't thought of it.
But the Twitter thing, it sort of feeds that addiction, you know, because we're already doing it. You're doing it on your show, and I do it in shows here, and I'm on the radio in New York. And then we, you know, then we also, when we're in our downtime, it's like, hey, how about this one? You know, we're just constantly. I still am on Facebook. I still do Facebook because I feel like it's the most efficient way to funnel my information to the NSA. So I still do that. I feel like, why put them to the trouble of actually taking webcam pictures of me? Why not just give it to them?
You know, the NSA doesn't even follow me. I get no respect at all.
Is that right?
I don't get followed by that. I have maybe like 30,000 tweets. When I discovered this, I thought, boy, everything I think is a pearl. You know, I'm dropping all these pearls, and where are the swine? You know, come on. No one was following me, and I've got up to, you know, and I started, you know, hijacking other people's followers, you know, following them, then they follow you back. And it's ridiculous, because absolutely, and I thought, well, it's good, because this would be promotion. I want it to be promotion for the show and stuff. You know, people
right.
say, is that, and isn't he a wit? Or is he a wit? I don't know. A twit? Isn't he a twit?
You know, another thing that I think is going to do instead of Twitter, and I've tried this recently, is I've tried actually talking face-to-face with people I know in person.
I don't like that.
I've got to say, it's disappointing. It's disappointing. It's worth trying once just to see if you like it.
Yeah.
But I
And you know what's bad about it? It can get physical. That's what I don't like about it.
It can get physical.
Yeah.
The worst, by the way, is if you're related to any of these people. You should not. don't do that. That is like such a struggle. It's like Thanksgiving all year long. No, thank you.
Yeah. But now, like with my kids, my girls, they're pretty much grown.
How old are they?
They're both in their 20s now.
Mm-hmm. Are they doing lots of social media as well?
Oh yeah, they do. But the only way I communicate with them really is I get the occasional Snapchat.
Mm-hmm.
That's heartwarming. And they text me, you know, and I said to my daughter last night at my birthday dinner, I said, you know, I don't ever hear from you anymore. You're tall, I don't see you, and my life is not good anymore. You know, it's my usual thing. That's me. And she says, Dad, I text you all the time. We text back and forth. I said, honey, it's not the same thing. You know, but, you know, so it's an odd age, and this is not my age that I find myself living in. Yeah.
You know, when I actually find myself communicating with my kids more and more through direct deposit.
Yes, I'm applauding that too. That's very good and very insightful, I think.
And you know what? They really appreciate when I reach out to them that way. They really do.
They do.
So maybe try that with your two girls and see if that improves things.
But this follower thing, you know, I thought, you know, I first heard about the whole Twitter thing, actually, John McCain. I said, what's he doing? What's John McCain doing? And he's tweeting. And then he had all these people following everything that he said, every weird thing that he says a lot of weird things, you know, and things you think are jokes, but maybe not. But, you know, but he's John McCain, you know, he's right in the middle of things, so maybe you should, you know. So I thought, well, that's the source of all power now, is to get on Twitter and get, you know, like maybe 1 million followers, or at least 100. You know, but I think John McCain is the one who really got it going.
You know, Michael, I'm going to try to put this gently, but if you're trying to stay in step with technology through John McCain, I think there's a larger problem. There's a larger problem we probably need to address here.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he was constantly tweeting to the Syrian rebels because he loves them, and they finally just blocked him on Twitter.
I can see that being a possibility. And you know what also is upsetting? Athletes doing it. I mean, guys on the bench are tweeting.
Right.
It seems
to
me, or in the dugout. I mean, how that should not.
And reading athletes'
crazy.
Tweets, there is really no more damning indictment of American public education, really, than reading athletes' tweets.
Yeah.
It's really not a good thing.
You can't understand it. Well, I've tried following them, and I don't get what they're saying. Maybe it's jargon or something.
Right, right. Well, yeah. The New York Knicks are great on Twitter. That's really, I'm in New York, and we really, they have a great social media following, and that's pretty much it. They don't actually get the ball through the hoop, I guess is the term.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of good tweets they put out there.
Do you follow anyone on the Knicks? Or?
There would be some element of self-loathing, really, I think, of following anybody on the Knicks at this point. I guess we have one. We have Carmelo Anthony is a good player.
Yeah.
We've got a few good guys. But, no, we just, you know, that's the main thing we've been obsessed with in New York is just how terrible our basketball team. It's like a lot of things in New York, really terrible and very expensive. You know, the Knicks just have really been suffering. Now we're of course, looking to Phil Jackson as the savior of all. Suddenly this became like a sports talk radio show. I didn't mean
go
to
ahead.
Do that.
You carry my end, too, because I'm not too good on that sort of thing. Let's go to the report here for just a minute. Now, what other stories are trending or are you tracking on the Borowitz report currently?
Well, it's interesting. We were talking a little about the NSA because this is unlike CNN, this is actually breaking news. This hasn't been reported anywhere else, but the NSA has had so many bad sort of image problems, and they're really going to take care of that. And this is just out today. They are going to rebrand themselves as the world's largest social network, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
They have 7.1 billion people. None of them have signed up, but they are following all of them.
Yeah.
It's a really great...
It's a huge friends and family kind
it's
of thing.
A great plan. Yeah. So that's an exciting thing. You know, it's interesting, you know, President Obama signed this bill, this executive memorandum a couple of days ago that's creating tremendous outrage and controversy because this memorandum he signed would pay people enough to eat. And that is creating tremendous controversy in Congress. A lot of Republicans lining up against
that. They're opposed to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been an eventful week. A lot has been going on.
Yeah, and I noticed you did cover the Snowden appearance at South by Southwest. I thought that was
an amazing appearance. Yeah, yeah. He dropped four new songs. it was incredible. They were really good. Some people said they were a little derivative. They said like in addition to downloading a lot of NSA documents, he appeared to be downloading a lot of Arcade Fire as well. They seem to suggest that. But Snowden, whatever you feel about whether you're for Snowden or against Snowden, I think we all agree we'd like to see a little bit less of Snowden. I just personally think. I think it's getting to be at that sort of Kardashian level now where it's like, I know he did something at some point, but like, just please just go away a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And he's certainly been the new. But the songs you say were good, or were they well received by the...
I guess there was mixed feeling. You know, yep. South by Southwest, there's so many sort of music snobs, and, you know, I think they were, you know, sort of all over the map. They were very eclectic. I think some of them were kind of alt-country. He did one that was kind of dubstep, I guess was the term. So Snowden is just kind of an eclectic performer. But he's, you know, I think he's now, you know, he's done his whistleblowing thing, and now he's really all about the music. And I think that's kind of a cool move for him.
Now, this John Travolta Ukraine connection perplexed a lot of people. I know it perplexed me.
I am surprised I was the only person who reported that story. That was such an amazing thing. This happened about a week ago after the Oscars. He made a surprise visit to Kiev, Independence Square, and he said some interesting things. He gave a very brief speech. In it, he pronounced Ukraine cranium, and then I guess he pronounced Crimea IKEA, and that was also a problem. But they were very confused by his appearance.
Yeah.
But he pilots his own plane, so he just sort of touched down and said a couple of confusing things and left.
Yeah. And I think you're probably the only one who covered the great mass gay migration to Arizona.
Yeah, that was a great story. I mean, before, you know, that was a big deal a couple weeks ago when there was that anti-gay law. Mm-hmm. And I guess there was this organization called Americans for a Gay Arizona that were organizing a mass gay migration to Arizona to make it the first majority gay state in the United States.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really a fantastic idea. There's a dearth in Arizona of cute restaurants, first of all. And I think that would be one thing it would be fixing. But it was really, I thought that was really a great thing. Yeah. I just loved that whole, it was a week of I wouldn't say temporary insanity, because we are talking about Arizona, after all. But
yeah.
It was a week of insanity where they really thought that they were going to, you know, they did pass this anti-gay law, and then they came to this very awkward realization that gay people have money and buy stuff.
Yeah.
And that seemed to have changed their sort of perspective on the thing.
Well, this migration thing, especially you get the elderly gay coming to, mm-hmm. It's like a twofer.
Yeah, absolutely. You get some good sun.
Yeah, you get something for each, serve each of that. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Arizona thing was undercovered, I think, at least in the way that you did it.
Yeah, that's generally true. But, you know, one thing I find a lot, especially I see this on Facebook, is I really thought at this point most people knew that if it's coming from me, it's a lie. I thought that was I've made that painfully clear over the years.
It's good
but
to know
instead,
that.
I'm always getting these messages on Facebook, these comments, which I find really entertaining, where people think that they've caught me making something up. And they'll say in a very kind of brusque, kind of stern tone, they'll say, Andy Borowitz, I have Googled this story all over the internet and have only found one source for it. You, sir. And sometimes they'll say source, as if I'm trying to pull something over on people. So
yeah.
It's funny. I'm really not. I think I've been very upfront about the fact that there's absolutely no accuracy about anything
yeah.
I say.
Did you notice that type of person always calls you sir, though?
Yeah, they do say
yeah.
sir.
You, sir. It's like what medieval times or something like that. It's about to throw the gauntlet down or something.
Well, now, Michael, you do an awful lot of fake headlines on your show. Do you
yeah.
ever get complaints from
no.
people?
No one listens. That's the beauty of it. I can say whatever I damn well please.
Well, you know,
it has no effect.
You know, Emily Dickinson enjoyed that as well in her career. You know, she was able to just write her poetry and no
but
one.
But afterwards, she killed. You know, after her death, she killed.
Exactly. So, yeah, 100 years from now, you'll be able to look down and laugh.
Yeah, I did like that one of hers. That my love had stood a loaded gun.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice one.
Mm-hmm. That was a good one.
Didn't play
that
at the time because then I thought, yeah, your love is a little
I like that one you wrote about, It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp. Remember that one?
Better choice. You always get the better choice, Andy.
Well,
darn it.
That's
I picked
true.
The loaded gun one, my love standing like a loaded gun, and you picked the pimp one. Perfect.
That's all right.
And the GOP, you must have had a lot of fun, I would think, with it, except how it's hard to satirize CPAC, isn't it?
Well, that's the problem. Yeah. Actually, that's my one complaint about my job right now,
yeah.
is that the reality of the world is making it very hard to write satire. And, you know,
yeah.
when you have...
That's true.
When you have Rand Paul and Ted Cruz as your leading straw poll winners... I actually had a poll at the Borowitz Report, which didn't get much coverage, but in a hypothetical matchup between Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, most people choose suicide. Now, by the way, for those of you who say it's not funny to make fun of suicide, I was not making fun of suicide.
No.
I was really making fun of the fact that we're doomed as a country, so that's
yeah.
okay.
I think there's no question about that.
Yeah.
That
I just want to put that out there because there's a lot of political correctness out there.
It's true. Those two intellectual giants.
But yeah. it is hard. It's very hard to make fun of you know, the CPAC crowd. And even, like, Sarah Palin was back there. And Sarah
yeah.
Palin is now riding high because she predicted this whole Ukraine thing. You know, she had
well,
said
she
that if President Obama was elected, that Vladimir Putin was going to invade Ukraine. And I thought it was actually cool the way Putin waited, like, a decent 5 years to do it, just so that it couldn't be traced back to Palin's prediction. He did
yeah.
wait 5 years. But I think, you know, everyone is waiting and wondering what Putin's going to do next. Like, is he going to, you know, what's going to happen with Crimea? Why aren't we just asking Sarah Palin? She's so well-versed in this stuff.
I know.
Seems to me she would be the one to ask.
I know. But she did add the insight about the mom jeans.
Right.
That the president was wearing mom jeans.
You know, just when we were giving her so much credibility as a foreign policy expert, I've got news for her. Like, you know, all the great experts, like, you know, Talleyrand and, I don't know, Machiavelli, Metternich, they really would not refer to people's pants at the end of their comments. They just,
no.
That's how they got so much credibility.
It's a non-causa pro causa, as we say in language.
Yeah, really
badly.
Bad idea.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense at all. So, yeah, okay. And I guess she's not probably what we once thought of her as being, the intellectual leader of the conservative movement.
No, she's not. That really is Rand Paul now. It's Rand Paul is the guy. I thought it was really great. He made this statement, very stirring speech to CPAC, where he said, we must listen to the voices in our heads. And I thought that was really a good... There was general agreement about that. No matter how loud and no matter how many, we must listen to them. That was really a great...
Now, did he actually say that? Because we're talking to you.
You know, I read it in the Borowitz Report, so all I want to say is, source? Source? Sir, I read that nowhere else on the Internet.
This from an unlicensed eye doctor. You know, that's what it is. He's unlicensed. He never got his license or something.
Is that really true?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I read it in your column. I have no idea. Andy, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're a busy guy, and it's a pleasure talking to you, as always. And the Borowitz Report, New Yorker, is the place to look for that. Andy Borowitz, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Andy.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael.
Appreciate it. The New Yorker. He's a New Yorker blogger. The blogger in the New Yorker. That's a pretty cool thing to be. Huh? You got to be blogging somewhere. Why not the New Yorker?
He's funny.
He is great. And what a good show that was, too, with Will Smith. Fresh Prince. That's my daughter's favorite show. And it was totally out of her era and everything, but she loved it, you know. Oh, Will Smith, she loved it. That's probably the main reason, come to think of it. But the writing was good. That and the Golden Girls. You know, you look at these old...
She liked Golden Girls?
Yeah, she loves Golden Girls. But the writing is so funny. I mean, the lines are all funny, you know. They got some killer Jewish writers there, because it all sounds like Jewish comics, basically. All their lines sound like some guy, you know, on stage at Jewish comics. Well, Golden Girls probably was true, but...
Yeah.
And Borowitz, come on.
It's all true.
Borowitz. Figure it out.
Sir?
Make the connection. They run everything. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, I'm through with that.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm better.
You're better?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not all better, but I'm
You're better,
way,
I'm worse.
Better.
So there's a balance on this show.
I think you got it wrong. I think actually Aubrey was the patient zero.
Aubrey is the carrier?
Viral zero, yeah.
Okay, that could be.
Yeah.
There he is. He's happy now, though.
Oh, yeah.
He's feeling pretty good back there in the booth.
Any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah. Okay. Because he's listening to This American Life and back there.
Yeah, he's not listening to the show.
Surprised we got him. Okay, how are you, Jeff?
Good.
Yeah,
he's good.
Healthy, all the kids healthy? No, everything good?
Yeah.
Yeah. And your daughter did so well in the swim meet, I know that.
Yes, and she just got braces on.
And she got braces on?
Invisalign?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what color are they?
She picked, I think, 4 different colors.
Yeah.
That's
really cute, isn't it?
Yeah.
For $10,000, it's really a cute thing to have. For two of them, you know, $20,000 like in cute braces. What's wrong with your teeth looking like your teeth? I mean, you know, it's crazy now. Every kid has to have braces now. And my girl's teeth, they were pretty nice. Nora had one little one that went slightly like that, you know. But who doesn't have
girl's teeth are fine.
Yeah, well, they've been straightened at a huge cost to me. That's why. You know, now they're perfect. You know. I want to see imperfect. I'm attracted to imperfection.
Well, here we are.
Because I have to be. Yeah. Okay. All right, what's this song going to be here?
This is called Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word.
Sounds good.